Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 345 of the podcast. It's Saturday, 28th of October, 2017, as I record this from Lincoln City on the Oregon coast of the USA. And my hotel room overlooks the Pacific Ocean, which has been a real joy this week. And I've walked every day, preferably several times a day along the beach, and it's really lovely. But you can definitely hear the roar of the waves. So it is a lovely day. And so this will be a quick intro today. Coming up soon, I have an interview with A.K. Benedict, who moved from being an indie rock musician into writing supernatural crime novels. And she's British too, so we have a good chat. We talk about writing the dark side and why we all need the shadow, the challenges of marketing cross-genre, writing audio drama, and she writes for Doctor Who and Torchwood. So fellow geeks will geek out at that, me included. I love Torchwood. We also get into how introverts can use performance techniques at conventions and literary festivals and use a kind of performance attitude to sort of these events where we have to leave our little rooms and stop being alone. So it's a fascinating chat, and that is coming up. So in publishing this week, I'm going to do a whole show on the Oregon coast stuff, so I'm not going to talk about that very much. But in publishing, Kindle has released a new version of the Kindle app, and the changes are being rolled out if you already use the app, as I do on my iPhone. And what's interesting is kind of the announcement includes things we already have, like page flip, sharing on social media, X-ray, whisper sync within the app itself. But you know, as authors, we've known about this for a while. So I'm kind of thinking that this relaunch is a more, and they're redoing the design, but it feels to me like they are relaunching this with, you know, a focus in order to let people know about these features. That's what it feels like to me. The thing that does look different, I might be wrong, but it was hard to tell what was different and what was like a relaunch, so that readers will discover it. Goodreads is now going to be on the mobile iOS. So if you have an iPhone, Goodreads will be integrated into your Kindle app. And it's been integrated on the Paperwhite in some countries for a while, and that's why I've been doing more on Goodreads. Amazon bought Goodreads a couple of years ago now, and many of us sort of thought, you know, wondered what they were doing. It was obviously a data play to see what people are reading, but by integrating Goodreads into the devices and the reading, the e-reading experience, this is fascinating to me because I have used Goodreads for years to kind of log my reading. The books that I kind of want to share that I'm reading. But I've had to close my Kindle app, open my Goodreads app, and use the Goodreads app to do that. And the discoverability within Goodreads is different. So I think, you know, maybe we'll even see Goodreads reviews entering the Amazon store pages. Maybe that's less gameable. I don't know. It is interesting as Amazon makes decisions based on data. So, if you've been ignoring Goodreads for years, now might be a good time to start, you know, revamping it. One of the annoying things about Goodreads as an author is you have to have a separate page per name. So I have three separate author pages and three different logins for Goodreads, which is a right pain. But basically, my VA has been setting up print giveaways every 2 weeks for the last year, pretty much. And we're going to continue, might even ramp that up in next year. And that just means when people, and we get probably 1,000 people each time entering the giveaways. And many of those people are then adding those books to their to read lists. And some of them will go on and buy them and, you know, review them and that type of thing. So it's a quite a passive, low, you know, I'm not putting much time in it at all because my VA does it all. But even if you do it yourself, setting up a giveaway every couple of weeks or once a month is not really a big deal. So just a thought, if you've been ignoring Goodreads for a while, because it's one of those things that it's like, oh, yay, when it first came out. And then you tend to ignore the established stuff. But I think that might be interesting
Also, they're kind of reminding people on iOS that you can't buy in apps. You actually can't shop within the Kindle app. You can get samples, but they actually, in all their marketing material for this relaunch, they're talking about how to buy on an iOS device, which is, you know, go to the mobile version of Amazon. And it reminded me, this week I did a presentation and I shared an image that showed that at the end of 2016, global mobile internet use overtook desktop / laptop. So 51% of all global internet use is now mobile, and that is only set to grow as 4G rolls out across the world to another 5 billion new internet users in the next few years. So just make sure you check your website and your books on mobile devices, because that will only increase over time. Also, in that panel on international markets, I hadn't realised that I hadn't shared a new resource, which is amazing. Thenewpublishingstandard.com, which is a new website. It's only launched last month, about international publishing news, run by Mark Williams, a British expat living in the Gambia in West Africa. And some of you might be in the international author Facebook group, which I've been in. But this is great because it's more of an official version of international news, and also with Antonio Tombolini from Italy, and it's the tech team from StreetLib are part of this, and they're open about that. But basically, it's focusing on international publishing news and opinions about disruption beyond the US and UK, which is really brilliant, because essentially what's happened in our, you know, in the US, UK, Australia, Canada, pretty much, is that digital publishing, ebook publishing, print on demand, you know, all our marketing techniques has pretty much stabilized. And the growth isn't happening. The volume sales are there, but the growth is going to be global, and because the rest of the world has barely even started yet. And that's true of the internet in a whole. You know, you might feel in your life that this has been around for ages, but for many, many people across the world, you know, most of the people in the world, this hasn't even started yet. The self-publishing revolution has not moved into many of these countries. And so I've been saying this for ages, and I'm really pleased that the new publishingstandard.com is now available, because, you know, it's going to be curated news, and I'll share some things on the show, but obviously they are doing a lot more of that news. So please pop on over if you're interested in the global growth of this publishing industry, the new publishing industry, www.thenewpublishingstandard.com. Thanks to Mark and Antonio, and I hope to have one of them on the show at some point. Okay, so my personal update is it is the final day of the Coast Business Masterclass with Christine Catherine Rush and Dean Wesley Smith, sort of hosting and running it and doing most of the presenting. And as I came last year, talked about it last year, when I made, you know, the decision to get into print in a big way and realized I'd been missing out on some of that, started Curl Up Press, and I will be doing something on how your own reading preferences shape the way that you think everyone else reads coming up soon, because I've had some real big realizations about why I think so differently about this to many people. And then also, you know, how my reading has, you know, changed my own judgment. So yeah, I'll be thinking about that. But it's been good. I mean, I'm really tired, like everybody else, because it's a 7-day conference, and there are 3 sessions a day, and it finishes quite late every night. So it's kind of like pretty intense. But sometimes you need an extended period to think about your business in a more strategic way. And I will at some point be recording my presentation that I did on advanced marketing strategy, which is more actually a business strategy. And we spend so much time bogged down in the minutiae of our of the author thing. So, you know, people are like, oh, how many sales did I make today? Or, you know, how did my ad perform yesterday? Or what is my income going to be, you know, at the end of this month? And sometimes I actually think you would do a lot better if you took some time to actually think about the strategic higher level of, okay, what do I actually want? You know, what is my yearly, your sort of annual plan? What do I actually want to achieve? And this is what this week has sort of helped me do. So I will be doing a whole show on this in 2 weeks' time, which will give me time to make this a coherent thought. Right now, I'm not very coherent. You can find my pictures on Instagram. JF Pen Author is my Instagram, and also on Twitter at The Creative Pen. But Instagram, you know, I don't post all that often, so there's some pictures there. And some people have been using the hashtag #OregonCoast. See, I can barely speak at this point. Okay. Also, we did a picture last night, which is awesome. I'll link to it in the show notes, with a load of the authors who have short stories in Feel the Fear, which is a short story anthology, which includes my own short story, The Dark Queen, which I wrote about the Sunken Cities exhibition at the British Museum. So it's a super creepy underwater city with lost gods. And I'm definitely, I said this last year, and I really do want to write some more short stories next year. And because there are lots of things that don't warrant a novel size book, and I tend to favour the longer form, but I do want to do that. So you can get Feel the Fear in ebook and print, but it's also in the Fear Story Bundle, available for Halloween, which you can get at storybundle.com/fear. And it's a limited time, pay what you like promotion. And it also includes My Gates of Hell and stories by Christine, Catherine Rush, Sean Costello, Rebecca Sinise, Mark Leslie, otherwise known as Mark from Kobo, Michael Warren Lucas, who I met this week and who is geeky, funny, awesome. So I'm looking forward to reading his story. Dean Wesley Smith and Leah Cutter and Gary Jonas. So if you want some dark reading on Halloween, and check it out, storybundle.com/fear. On useful stuff, I'm so pleased about this. Like, I'm seriously happy. There are two new podcasts arriving in the self-publishing space this week. And even if you're not interested in the basics, it's great to have other resources to send people to, because I'm very aware that, you know, I purposefully am not covering the basics of self-publishing or the basics of marketing on this show, because I want to keep learning and keep this interesting for me. And, you know, a couple of years ago, I said, right, I don't even want to talk about this anymore. As far as I'm concerned, self-publishing is publishing, and it's the shortest part of the process. And once you get your process sorted, it doesn't take much time at all. But there's people coming into this every single day, and there will be more people coming into this. It is going to get bigger. So there are more authors who need more resources. So, of course, I have lots on my website, but I don't have a basic podcast. So and I'm not saying these are basic podcasts, you know, I'll just tell you. Mark Coker from Smashwords has launched the new Smart Author Podcast. There are 4 episodes up already, including best practices of best-selling authors, how to sell more books with pre-orders, and more. So check that out, Smart Author Podcast with Mark Coker from Smashwords. And of course, Mark has been around since the beginning, and you know, Smashwords is one of the very first ebook distributors to use to get out there. So really interesting. Also, Dave Chesson at Kindlepreneur, and Dave make KDP Rocket, which I use to generate keywords for Amazon ads. And it's a great tool. And Dave also has free courses on doing all kinds of ads. So he's just launched the Book Marketing Podcast at Kindlepreneur.com. And it has 3 episodes up already, including keyword mastery for nonfiction and fiction authors, book category selection, and finding hot niches, and some other things. So I really like these two. These are 2 very different podcasts by 2 different guys. And what I like is that they are organized with specific topics that relate to self-publishing and book marketing, very different to the more organic shows like mine and the self-publishing podcast guys, because we've been podcasting for many years now. And, you know, I started this show because I wanted to learn. And, you know, many people do start podcasts because they want to learn about new things. And so that doesn't really allow for a more structured show. And I don't want to have a more structured show at this point. So I'm really pleased. So check those out, the Smart Author Podcast and Book Marketing Podcast. And that will be different to the Sell More Book Show. The Sell More Book Show is more about every week, what are the new things and the new tips? Whereas Dave's podcast looks more like sort of specific topics that they're going to cover. So I love this. I mean, and again, podcasting might feel like there's a lot of podcasts, but actually, it you know, there are far fewer podcasts than there are blogs, for example, or even books in the world. So I am actually, I have been thinking this week, I have had so many ideas about a new site, a new brand, maybe a new podcast, definitely a new blog. And it's so funny because I'm just like, what am I doing? But yeah, more on that later. Okay, so thanks for all your emails and tweets and comments on the post this week. I actually had a blog post on writing with depression. It wasn't my post, it was a guest article, and that's there's been some lovely comments on that. So there'll be more on that with the Healthy Writer, but very interesting to see. So thanks for all your emails and tweets and comments this week. And remember, you can let me know what you're doing while you're listening to the show by tweeting me at The Creative Pen. So hi to Valerie Isan and Eric Edstrom, who listened to last week's show while actually here with me in Lincoln City, which is quite meta, let's face it. Jason says, here's a photo of me 50 feet in the air painting light poles at my day job, listening to your show. Stay safe, Jason. Noelle B in Belgium says, I listen to your podcast while driving to and back from work every weekday. It's quite an ordinary 30-minute drive, aside from the 14 whorehouses I go past, which made me laugh. Yeah, and she also said she enjoyed the interview with Anna McNuff. Things are better when we don't take ourselves too seriously. Yeah. Anna is one of those people whose pictures and Instagram feed and blog I check when I'm feeling low energy, because she is like super high energy. Amanda J. Clay, listening to your chat with Ryan Holiday while jogging in Valencia in Spain, sent a beautiful beach picture. And I am definitely looking forward to getting back to Spain soon. Although obviously, you know, the political situation in Spain is very interesting with the Catalonia situation. But you know, I love Spain. So I'll be getting back there soon. I almost moved there in the 90s. And with the whole Brexit thing, I'm like, maybe I should have moved. But no, I'm very British, but I do love Spain. Bridget Booth says, listening to Anna McNuff after a day of hiking at the Glacier National Park, feeling a bit like an adventurer, sent some beautiful mountain pictures. Marty Dumas or Dumas said, listening to the show, making dinner for my children. Appreciate the effort of the New Orleans pronunciation. You're doing great. I actually heard an American say New Orleans this week. So clearly they're within America. It's the Southerners saying New Orleans. So there you go. But I practice. Daryl King sent a picture from the gym saying, listening where I do most mornings. And hello to everyone listening to the gym or exercising, including L.E. Vera, who was walking home while working at the University of Birmingham in the UK. Okay, and finally, Mark Llewellyn says, enjoying listening to your podcast while on a writing holiday at the French Riviera, Monaco and Italy, and sent a picture of himself writing next to a yacht. So Mark, well done. That sounds awesome, but you're just showing off now. Come on. Okay, so today's show is sponsored by Kobo Writing Life, and I will play a word from our sponsor in a minute. This corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting and transcription, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a huge thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon. Thanks to new patrons, Deborah Kuntz, thriller writer who I met here in Oregon this week, and Debbie Maxwell Allen. I really do appreciate your support on Patreon, or Patreon, as Americans say. Like the tweets and emails, it really demonstrates you enjoy the show and want it to continue. You can support with just a couple of dollars a month, or some more dollars a month if you like, a couple of coffees a month. And somebody said to me this week, you know, isn't a dollar like a bit pointless? And I'm like, no, not at all, because everybody throwing in a dollar makes for lots of dollars. It's a bit like ebooks, you know, But you don't say, oh, it's just like a dollar or 99 cents or $2. You say, yay, I just need more of those. So if you support the show on Patreon, you can get the extra monthly Q&A audio, which also now has notes, so you know what questions get answered. And you can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Right, here's a word from our sponsor, and then we'll get on with the interview.
Hello, everyone. This is Mark Lefebvre, director of Cobra Writing Life. I am here to tell you about the opportunity for Cobra Writing Life authors to get their books into Overdrive's library system through Cobra Writing Life. It is currently still in beta release while we're working out, ironing out some of the data flow between ourselves and our sister company, Overdrive. But one of the most exciting things that we're doing with this relationship isn't just allowing you to click a button, add a US dollar library price, and get that over into Overdrive's library marketplace system, but we're also doing some curated selling to the libraries directly. I was recently in Cleveland at Overdrive's Digipalooza, and I had the great thrill and honor of being able to represent about 300 different fantastic Cobra Writing Life titles that were curated by our merchandising team as titles that we believe librarians should take a better look at, including, well, we happen to recommend some titles from your host, Joanna Penn, for fans of Dan Brown or James Rollins. But, you know, that's just kind of because we like her stuff too, and we know it's going to appeal to that audience. So if you're interested in getting access to that, email us at writinglife@cobra.com. We'll send you an FAQ on how the beta program is working. But let's get back to your host, Joanna Penn.
Today, I'm here with AK Benedict. Hi, Alexandra.
Hello there, how are you?
I'm good. And if people are on the video, it is almost Halloween here, isn't it? Which explains your get-up behind you there and the skeleton, which is cool.
Yes, hello, there's the skeleton. That's Brian, the skeleton.
That's cool. And we're going to come back to dark things. But just a little introduction for those who might not know you. AK Benedict writes supernatural crime novels, poetry and short stories, radio plays and audio dramas. So many things. Like, it's a tongue twister. She's also been a composer and indie rock singer-songwriter, which is so cool.
Oh, yeah.
So you're just too cool. So tell us a bit more about your eclectic creative life and how did you get to this point in writing?
I started out doing music, although I've always written since I was a child, but professionally I was a musician and a rock singer, but I was writing novels on the side and short stories. And then when I got my book deal, I had to make a decision between doing music, writing and acting, because I was also acting in lots of different things and on stage and films. And I couldn't do all three well, so I went for writing because that's what I've always wanted to do. And there are times that I miss doing lots of other things, but generally I try and keep to at least writing, and then I do a million different things within that because I can't stop myself.
Yeah, which is interesting. So, well, amazing that you were able to say no to these other things. Mm. But like you say, you still do lots of things within writing. So do you think that's just part of your personality, that you need all these different things going on?
I think so. I think I have so many things going off in my brain at once that I need to lodge some of them elsewhere at any one time. If I stuck to novels, then there'd maybe one or two a year. But there are hundreds firing off at all times, short stories and poems. And I need to keep my brain in some ways slightly less chaotic by having an outlet for them.
Yeah. And how do you track your ideas? Do you use an app or do you use journals or do you just wait for them to reemerge?
I do journaling. So I have a writing journal where I keep a track of where everything is. And wherever I go, I take that with me. But there's an online version as well, just in case it all falls apart. But generally, they're just there singing in my brain, so they won't let me go anyway. Sort of sirens calling from different corners.
Yeah. Well, everyone loves online tools. So how do you put those ideas online? Is it a Moleskine journal online thing? Or what do you use?
I've got a Moleskine online. I'm like drawing on it and doodling. That's the main one. I've used various other ones. They haven't worked as well. Mm. But I also like having a one that I can carry around with me that I use my hands and that I stick things in and take photos and put them straight in as well. So it's a real combination to try and harness everything that fireworks out.
Yeah, no, I know that. And just with everything you've got going on, I'm like, yeah, how do you track that? But but I want to come to kind of, you know, the Halloween theme, the darkness, yes. You know, the skeleton behind it. Because you and I are both quite dark creatures in the books we write. And, you know, we've ended up on panels together at things, you know, at festivals about the, you know, the nice women who look like they're all goody two shoes. Yeah, we really are. We both look like little angels. And then we come out with some dark stuff. So I wondered, like, where do you think that comes from in you? Why the attraction to the dark side of things?
I don't know. It's always been there. I don't remember a time when I didn't love ghosts and horror stories and the strangeness. I read fairy tales from when I was very young. I loved The Red Shoes and The Little Mermaid. The ones that have a sinister or dark or sad ending seem much more plausible to me than the happy ever after. And I felt much more comfortable with them. That sort of, I think I led my parents to worry a little bit. But
mine too. My mum's like, what did I do to you?
But it's probably that I had meningitis when I was two and a half, and was blind and deaf for a while, and they thought I was going to die. And I think something altered at that point. Apparently I changed and had lots of nightmares. So I think horror and crime and darkness was a way of assimilating all of the darkness that I'd had quite early on, but didn't have any other way to think about it or talk about it when I was so young. But I don't know. It's very hard to say how you get to somewhere. But that's the nearest I've got to so far anyway.
Or I wonder, sometimes I wonder whether other people do see the things that we do. They just won't admit it to themselves.
Yeah. They need other people to show them the way. Lead them through the labyrinth.
Yeah. I mean, you know, one of the common questions I think we get at festivals, you know, is... you know, why do nice women write dark crime? So what do you know, and I know there's people listening who will have that question, so sorry, but you get it again. So so why do you think readers want this type of thing, like going past who we are? Why do readers want it? Why do we need the shadow?
Because it's there all the time. And you're right, we carry on our lives peddling away underneath, pretending everything is fine. But really, we're living a life against death, but we're being in the now is so important because we know what's coming. And most people block that out. And dark thoughts happen all the time. The shadow is behind us. And crime and horror gives a little reprieve from that pressure from behind. It's sort of just that little tiny valve that is released briefly and then closed again. My hot water system doesn't work at all until I release the valve, and then it goes pshht, and then I very quickly close it before the pressure drops too much. Mm. And I think it's that it's a discreet and certain amount of time that you can look into the cupboard, you can look behind the mirror and see the shadows and then close it again very quickly, knowing that you can lock it until the next time. So that's part of our job, I think, is to allow people to see onto the other side just for the moment, and then leave it alone.
Mm. And have you found the world of books more difficult in terms of genre? Because I've seen they've tried to rebrand some of your books, right? What is the issue with genre when it comes to horror, crime, thriller, supernatural? Like, you know, where do you see where you sit, and why do we even have these genres?
I think supernatural crime covers it, but I think people do have a problem with marketing supernatural crime, because if you do things that are too crimey on the cover, then people object when they suddenly realize that there's a supernatural element to it. Mm-hmm. If you make it too fantastical, and so it looks like a fantasy book or a horror book, then horror readers or fantasy readers might say, but this is police procedural with a small amount of ghosts in it. So I think I can't worry about that too much, that I write the books I need to and want to write, and hope that the people whose job it is to market it find its place. But I think in it they find it difficult.
Mm.
Yes, I don't know about the way it works for you.
I think because our books are quite similar in that they have elements of crime and thriller, but also supernatural. And some would say horror, because, you know, often ghosts and demons and things, they kind of cross between fantasy and horror. But I don't think either you or I write horror, really, like slasher gore.
Oh, definitely not. I haven't written any slasher or gore. There's a small amount of gore in some of my short stories, but hardly any. I think I write more weird short stories. So ghost stories or things that are a bit strange and unsettling, rather than the slasher element of horror, which I also love to watch. Mm. And I love Stephen King and so much horror, but mine is on the unsettling, unnerving, and hopefully poignant side of haunting rather than slashing.
Yeah, I feel, you know, that's kind of why I wanted to talk to you, and I always, you know, like seeing you at festivals. So I feel like there's a few of us who kind of fall through the gaps of, and the others sort of look at us in a weird way. You mean you have supernatural stuff in your crime work? And it's like, what's wrong with that? But I think it's fascinating. How do you think, because of course, you know, you're traditionally published and, you know, very, you know, in that world, but you've come out of the kind of indie music scene. And of course, you know, I wondered how you think that, does music have the same type of genre split and the same type of rules than books as books do?
Oh, I think it does. I think, and again, when I was doing music, I was making something that was variously described as indie punk, cabaret noir. it had as many titles as I'm given as a writer. So I didn't really sit in anything there. They sort of describe me as David Bowie meets Diamanda Galas meets Susie Sue. And I love all those people, so I was fine with that. But that's really hard to sell as well. And in an indie market, it's slightly easier because they just go, oh, it's just a bit weird. And the weird people find you. In a traditionally published market, this is mass market commercial level. And that's very hard to depict for something that will go either on the Waterstones 3 for 2 or on supermarket shelves. I think I don't know. I don't envy them that job. And I'm not sure that I would know what to do either, really.
Yeah, I must say the problems of being cross-genre. Well, I wondered, I mean, is that why you do more short stories? Because you've only got two novels, right? Two full-length novels out there.
Yeah.
So do you think short stories are much more open to different genres?
Yes, I think so. And there is a big market for short stories, particularly in the sort of ghost stories element and more horror. Not so much crime short stories, but ghost stories really fit well with short stories. There's the short, sharp, unnerving horror that you sit down with a drink in an evening in winter. Is less suited to a crime short story, I think. And I love writing them and reading them out to an audience as well. And also audio drama works, because that combines my love for science fiction as well as horror and fantasy, as well as everything else that I do. So I can all bundle it into one. And it's much more easily accepted, I think, in a market like Big Finish that I write for audio drama.
Let's come to audio drama, because I find it so interesting, and I've been looking at this because I feel like screenplays, like people write screenplays for movies or TV and most of them never get made, and yet audio dramas seem much more accessible. So tell us, and you also written radio plays for Torchwood and Doctor Who, which are very cool. So tell us about how is writing for audio specifically different to writing novels or even screenplays?
When I was starting to learn how to write audio drama, it was getting my head around that all the audience has to go on is sound. So when I'm writing a novel, I can be the cinematographer and the makeup artist and the costumier and everything else. But in audio, all you have is what a listener will have playing in their ears. And you can create a very visual sense from what goes into the ears, but you have to be very aware of it. So the writer for audio drama puts in all the effects so that they know what to do. And I didn't realize that to start with. I kind of assumed wrongly that somebody else would do that. But you have to hear it all in your head in order for a sound designer to be able to then translate your words into sound. So that was the first one. And then conveying through dialogue without it being very expositional. So here I am standing in a car park. Oh, look at those cars. Zoom. it's quite tricky.
So in that case, would you write like a line, sound of cars passing on a road or something?
Yes. So FX would be traffic noises, cars going quickly, cars going slowly, something that would impact on the scene that's just about to come up. So, and that may be then drawn on that one of the cars stops or there's an accident or something that then plays into plot, or it's just background. But you have to be very aware of painting an aural picture as you go along. It's quite fun. It's quite challenging, but it's fun.
Do you think you can do that, or that you came naturally to that because you come from music?
I hope so. I think so, because I do think in that way anyway. I'm always thinking about sounds, and when I write, I use the senses a lot. I use smell and sound in particular to paint pictures when I'm writing. So I think that element came relatively easily. The structuring of it and other elements are harder for me, but yes, I really love sound, all elements of sound. And I used to do sound design as part of my making music. So when I was composing, I would sometimes do a score with really strange, weird noises on it, and also Foley, so various sound effects. So I think that all came into handy as well.
Yeah, wow. That's so interesting. And now I think, like, I was thinking, oh, I'd love to do that. And I don't use sound much at all. In fact, I spend a lot of my time with earplugs in and noise cancelling headphones on. Like, I like silence. So I'm like, okay, maybe I won't try audio drama. But I'm interested because, of course, you know, with Torchwood and Doctor Who, you're very constrained as to the world and the characters. So how different was it writing in an established world versus making stuff up?
They've both got pros and cons. Stepping into existing characters feels like shoes that have already been worn, but you can still skip in and dance in. So I know Doctor Who and Torchwood very, very well. I'm a huge fan since when I was tiny. So I knew the voices quite well. So it felt like ventriloquism in some ways, but also that I get to get these characters that I love to say and do things that I wanted, which is liberating in its own way. And so there are constraints and there are things that you can't show and things that you can't mention because it may conflict with canon or something that's about to come up. So there are restrictions all over the place, but in some ways that then opens up new doors and makes me think again and hopefully end up somewhere that's more interesting or at least is more me. So, And I get to write the Doctor and the TARDIS and Captain Jack, which I haven't stopped thrilling about yet. I hope I don't.
No, that is very cool. I mean, I would love more series of Torchwood. I mean, they do know that, right? They do know that people want it.
There are petitions online all the time. They really want it. I was really privileged to be able to write an episode of series 5 of Torchwood, which is basically carries on from the TV series, but for audio. So I had all the notes from Russell T. Davis, who set up Torchwood and is behind it all, and the ideas for new characters and new developments. But I'd really love to see it on screen. It's wonderful in audio, but there's nothing like seeing Captain Jack's coat, you know, flapping as he strides down a corridor.
I do like Doctor Who, but not as much as Torchwood. And I'm pretty sure it's because of they went much darker.
Yes, darker and weirder.
Yeah, darker and weirder, and just generally, yeah a bit out there. And Cardiff, obviously.
Obviously Cardiff.
Weird Cardiff. So just back on that. So if people are interested in writing audio plays and dramas and things like this, how did you get that work? Because it seems like you can't just rock up and go, hey, I'll just write something for Torchwood.
No, you can't. It was kind of tangential in one of those sort of wonderful, weird ways that happens when you go to festivals sometimes. And I went to FantasyCon for the first time about 3 years ago, and I met some people who wrote for Torchwood and Doctor Who, both novels and audio drama. And I was immensely impressed and started jabbering away. I didn't really think anything of it. And then about 6 months later, I got an email from the producer of Torchwood who said that he'd been asking around and my name had been put forward, and said to read my novel. So he read The Beauty of Murder, which deals with a time-travelling serial killer. So it has science fiction and fantasy elements mixed with crime. And said, we'd love you to write an audio drama with Captain Jack and Queen Victoria. Go. So it's actually going to festivals sometimes brings about these weird and wonderful opportunities. And you can call it networking or just making friends with people who love the same things you do. And if it's genuine and authentic, I think it can come. There are really standard opportunities to get into Big Finish, who produce audio dramas for Doctor Who and Torchwood. I think twice a year, maybe, they put out a call for short trips, which is sort of a short version. And they look for new talent that way. So there are more conventional ways to get in. And you can also write spec scripts for Radio 4 and things like that. So there are ways in. But like lots of these, it's bumping into people, talking, relationships grow, and something comes out of it. So there are both ways in, I think.
Well, that's interesting you mentioned festivals, because I follow you on social media and you are often at festivals. Now you are a performer and you like dressing up, don't you? So you are often dressed up at these things, which, and you look like you're having a lot of fun. And to my surprise, when I sung with you at a karaoke event, you're a hell of a singer, and I was like, oh crap, she knows how to sing. and now you're part of the Slice Girls, which
I am.
Tell people about the Slice Girls, because it's very cool.
The Slice Girls are a group of female crime writers who sing about love, sex, death and crimes while wearing corsets.
And appear only at literary festivals?
Yeah, so far anyway. I think, there was a launch that we went to for Bloody Scotland and we performed that. But so far we've appeared at VoucherCon and Bloody Scotland and Harrogate and various other places. And beginning to around the world now, which is brilliant fun. So I get to travel and sing and have fun with my wonderful friends. And it doesn't get much better than that. I didn't know that I'd enter crime writing and end up stalking a stage in high-heeled boots while wearing a corset. It's
it is incredible. incredible. And it's very, what's interesting is a number of you in the group are singers or performers in some way. So I wanted to ask, because for many people listening, and myself included, it'd be like, that is the worst thing I could possibly think of, would be kind of dressing up at a literary event and singing. So, do you think that this performance side of you is something that anyone can learn? So I guess, like, what are your tips for doing more things like that and putting yourself out there, even that connection, that networking, you know, what are your tips for making connections at events, which so many authors are scared of?
I think it becomes much easier the more you go. So don't put too much pressure on yourself the first time. Scope out the area. I tend to go, and then if it all gets too much, go back to my room for a bit, because I'm an introvert who performs. So I shine for a bit and then I go for a sleep, or just go, oh. So don't put too much pressure on yourself, number one. And really, the best things come out of being yourself. And that is easier when you're surrounded by people who are like you. So at literary events, I meet friends who love books, and we can talk about books and writing and ghosts or crime or other things. And suddenly you find it's 3 a.m. and even if I'm not drinking, I've been up talking with people when normally I'm in bed by 10, 11 o'clock with a book. So be as relaxed as you can, but you will find people that you just click with, maybe for the first time, because you're talking about things that it's quite a private activity, reading, and so is writing. And suddenly you're surrounded by people who understand, and that is wonderful. So just let that happen. And then the connections and the networking just follows on authentically from that. And I think the best networking is all authentic connections.
No, it's a really good point. And that being yourself, I think is really important. And for those of us who have this darker side, I think it can be hard to admit that necessarily. So I wondered about the dressing up thing, right? Because is it easier? Like you say, you're an introvert who's a performer. Do you find that you're putting on a performance? So by dressing up, you're almost hiding your real self and sort of showing people aside, and then you can kind of keep a mask almost.
It's almost the other way around. It's so applying lipstick or just changing my hair or popping on the corset. You can't pop them on. It takes quite a lot of effort between the lot of us backstage in a sort of human caterpillar kind of way. But it's like that lets me come out, the part of me that is slightly rapacious and dominant and can stalk around the place. It's there all the time, but needs a stage and some structure and accessories just to let go. And it's about letting go. So it's less about hiding than unleashing. And sometimes props are all it is needed just to unleash. Just like on Halloween, people put on masks in order to unmask themselves so they can find their darkness and show it by slipping on a skeleton costume. And then they can inhabit that part of them that we all have. And that can be quite elaborate or just very simple. But it's finding whatever way you can to express what is lurking and pacing around inside me.
No, that's awesome. And it's actually something I've been thinking about, because I do a lot of speaking, keynote speaking as well as panels, and I find it utterly exhausting. And someone suggested that I should have acting training because of what you learn as an actor around breath work and energy. So do you, because you're an actress as well, I mean, you've done all kinds of things, so is that something that you've learned, is the control of your energy and breath so that you're not so tired?
Yes, I had ME for a very long time in my 20s and early 30s. And I was performing at that time and would sort of unleash something and then be prone for a month afterwards. So I had to learn how to breathe and not let all this energy suddenly explode, but actually channel it. Mm. And that just took a while, but now I can go on stage and not be exhausted afterwards. I'm more exhausted by talking for an hour with people generally and interacting, particularly if we're not sparking.
Which is why so many authors use alcohol.
Oh, and they use it. Oh, yes. But performance is actually quite enervating now rather than debilitating. But that's come with time. And breath is a lot to do with it. So I do quite a lot of breathing exercises beforehand and really sort of bring down my sort of energy or chi or whichever way you want to call it into a distilled version that then I can control and not just blast out at an audience, but that I keep for myself as well.
Mm. No, I this is a lesson I need to learn. So I'm listening to this. I'm definitely paying attention. So I wanted to come back to, you said earlier about reading out your short stories. So this is another thing. I think I'm quite happy, but I can talk and speak at panels, but reading my work out loud like scares me completely. So how, yeah, it's weird. So what are your tips for reading your own work aloud at events, which many authors have to do?
I just begin to think of it as entertaining an audience rather than reading my own story. So I look at the element areas of the story where I'm building up to either a scare or a reveal, and then work it around that and maybe lull the audience into a full sense of security with the way that I'm talking, and then drop the reveal and then get the reaction. And it's all about playing to an audience rather than putting my ego out there. So it's pleasing them. Whereas if I start thinking, are they liking it? Oh no, what am I going to do? I become much more introverted and closed down again. If I focus on entertaining them, then I don't think like that. So that's probably, well, one way to start is my job right now is to entertain this audience with what I've got in front of me and try not to think of it as your own work.
Yeah, that sounds good. Well, then, you know, I feel that there's so much wrong with literary festivals because mostly they are not entertaining.
Yes.
You know, that's why I think the Slice Girls could be huge, because I mean, you guys could just entertain every single conference and be the number one top thing, because the rest of it's quite boring. So what can, because a lot of people listening are involved in these events. What can we do to make literary festivals better for authors and readers?
I think things are beginning to change slightly. Places like Bloody Scotland and Bute, they brought in, well, kind of invented the Slice Girls in Bloody Scotland because they wanted a proper Scottish music night and thought, we'll draw on these resources of singers and entertainers within crime writers. And there are quite a lot that we can use. And they also have a late night quiz, which I did with Mark Billingham and Val McDermott and people at Bloody Scotland this year, where it's about fun and entertainment and laughter rather than serious, let's do a quiz and see how much we know. It's about just entertaining the audience and making them laugh and go home with a smile on their face. So bringing more of those things in, funny panels where the aim is just to have fun, where you ask them weird questions. Kevin Wignall asks some wonderful questions. Mm. Well, you were on that panel,
yes,
weren't you?
Yes. Yeah, he asks things that children will ask.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. And so interspersed with something serious is something that is just hilarious. Mm. And I think that kind of thing can happen a lot more rather than the,
We are all so intelligent and yes. So serious.
Yes. Because when you've got that for 3 days... That's no fun, is it?
No, I must say, we have to do something. I feel like the industry does need that shake-up. So, yeah, I think you're right. There's a lot that's starting to happen. The Scottish are a lot better at it, I think, than the English.
Yeah.
And the Americans, well, we'll see. Love all the Americans listening. We're almost out of time, but what are you, like, what are all the things you're working on right now? Like, what are you juggling?
Okay. I have 1, 2, 3, 4 audio dramas on the go at the moment in various different things that I can't say. I've got a short that I'm writing at the moment. I've got 2 adult novels on the go, and 1 I've just finished a children's crime novel.
And some short stories, probably.
And some short stories. Yeah. And I'm writing an album slowly as well.
But music album?
Yeah. I'm just beginning to start doing my own music again. But there's a lot bubbling at all times, as you can see.
Yeah, wow. Well, then final question has to be, so do you schedule your time like for each of those projects, or how do you manage your time between all of that?
Often really badly. I tend to split between morning, afternoon and evening. So morning, I like to get some scripts done. Afternoon is my more introspective prose time. So I tend to do my novels. And evening is quite a good time to write a short story or a song or something else. So they each have their own feeling according to what part of the day it is, as to whether it's quite practical in the morning or some slightly more navel-gazing in the afternoon.
Fantastic. Well, it's been so interesting. So where can people find you and everything you do online?
My website is akbenedict.com. My Twitter handle is ak_Benedict. And I am akbenedict on Instagram. Those are the main ones that I do, and also on Facebook.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for your time, Alexandra. That was great.
Thank you.
So I hope you enjoyed the conversation with AK Benedict today. And I'm doing quite a lot of thinking about integrating the shadow side and how I can use performance techniques to make my own speaking more sustainable. Definitely something I want to do some personal development in 2018. So next week, I'll be talking about how to build a business around a nonfiction book with Jim Kukral, who you might know from the Selmore Book Show. Jim and I have been sort of business buddies for years, and we will have a change of focus from the craft and the sort of fiction side. So look forward to that. And then the next couple of shows coming up, I will be doing, after Jim's episode, there'll be my lessons learned from the Coast Workshop, so I'll be working on that. And then a very exciting show which I'm looking forward to publishing in 2027, at the 10 year anniversary of the iPhone and the Kindle, which both launched in 2007. Can you believe it? How much change has been made for us all since then? So we'll be looking forward 10 years. I'll be doing that with Emmanuel Nataf from Readsy, who is a millennial and in his 30s, which I think is awesome. Gives a different perspective. I'm 42. I like to think I'm a millennial. I'm actually Generation X. So, I didn't grow up with the internet. So I'm really excited about that conversation. We'll be looking at blockchain, AI, and much more. So some exciting episodes ahead. I hope you will stick with me and also stick with me into 2018. I really think we're coming to a sort of stabilization point with the US, UK, Canada, Australia. But we are looking at the next big wave of interesting stuff coming. So happy writing week, and I will see you next time.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.